He's wearing white trunks, former world heavyweight champion, Smokin' Joe Frazier. Wearing white trunks, former world heavyweight champion, also Mr. Muhammad Ali.
Dundee, Ali's trainer, right next to me, is saying it. You may hear him. Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier! The heavyweight champion is taking the mandatory eight count, and Foreman is as poised as can be in a neutral corner. He is.
All righty, welcome everybody to Ring News 24 Boxing Radio, the boxing show where we bring you a sweet science straight up. With no twist. And how's everybody doing out there this evening? Monday. I don't even know the date, but I know it's Monday. August 23rd, 2016. Yep, the days are flying by. The dog days of August are soon surpassing. I'll be on vacation for the rest of the week. That's why we have the special Monday evening edition of Tuesday edition of the show. I don't even know what day it is, but Tuesday, August 23rd, 2016. Let's get that official, and I will be going on vacation for the rest of the week. And, of course, I am Anthony George, also known as Zoot. I will be your host for this evening. A little bit later on, we'll be talking with Ivan Robinson. Coming up first in just a few short minutes, we'll have Thomas Cornflake LaMagna on, who has a big fight coming up. And we'll be talking to him as well. But before we get to these two fighters, we'll talk a little bit about the boxing action that has come this past weekend. And as usual, there was a lot on television. Was it quantity over quality? People make that argument all the time. But I think it's safe to say the big winners of the weekend were Heather the Heat Hardy, Errol Spence, and Gerald Big Baby Miller. In no particular order, but all three of those fighters won fights, all three were considered steps up, I think, for each of those fighters. The Heather Hardy, Shelly Vincent fight being the most controversial in terms of the decision. 10-round decision, excellent fight. Shelly Vincent does not get the decision over Heather Hardy, but does not embarrass herself. Some controversy with a wide scorecard. But nonetheless, Heather Hardy is victorious, and I'll let everybody else argue about who they think won. I think it was a great fight. I would love to see a rematch, and congratulations to Heather and Shelley. Well, maybe if it was somewhere else, somewhere more friendly, like Providence, like you say you want the rematch to be, maybe the judges would have gave it to you. It was that close of a fight, I agree. But nonetheless, a big score for female boxing. Now, Jarrell Bigby Miller's night was cut short. He was in action against Fred Casey, another fight where Miller was stepping up a little bit in competition. Casey has been in there with some tough opponents, and Miller had a lot of baggage, so to speak, going into that fight, weighing in close to 300 pounds, putting on a lot of weight. In between weigh-ins, it was reported, and he was at 280, and then in a short period of time was 296, and he was kind of aloof about that when he was talking about it on air on the Showbox telecast. But, you know, he didn't go that many rounds. The fight was cut short. He did lose the first round. Cassie was doing some good work. But Miller is the kind of guy at 296 pounds, and maybe that is something that would hurt him down the line when he steps up and he has championship fights and he goes longer and goes the 12-round distance, maybe. I don't know. Maybe if somebody takes advantage of the body shots and all of that. But he does not look like an out-of-shape 300-pound guy who's going to have trouble with stamina. And remember, he's been battle-tested with the kickboxing. So night gets cut short due to an injury to Cassie's hand. So just when Miller seemed to be cooking, too, is when that happened. But nevertheless, a big explosion on Showbox for him, another victory, and you look for him to step up in the future. Now, of course, the big one that everybody's talking about is Errol Spence. And this fight was talked about a lot beforehand because it was a title eliminator for the IBF. It was talked a lot about after the fact because of the explosiveness of Spence blowing away a guy who won 12 hard rounds with Keith one time, Dermon and Bundu. It obviously sets his sights for an IBF title shot. He is now the mandatory for that Kell Brook's title, and obviously Kell Brook is busy, so we'll see what happens there. You also have Keith Thurman as a title holder at 147. Might be a more doable fight in terms of both of those guys being PBC fighters. We'll definitely see. But the big extra added attachment to that fight was the reports of the Lovely ratings up to about 6 million viewers. Highest rated PBC ever. Right smack Sunday afternoon, right next to all the Olympic glory. Make no mistake about it. The big reason why this fight got that many viewers was because it was the Olympics lead-in. I believe it was the men's basketball that was on right before. But even with that, I mean, they dropped the ball. They didn't show the female fight in a lot of areas between Hardy and Vincent at that time on Channel 4. A lot of people, I in New York, had to wait to see that fight later on in the evening on the NBC Sports Network on tape delay. But everybody got to see Spence take Bundu apart. Spence is now a guy that got a lot of exposure. Let's see if it carries over. Obviously, with Brooke being the IBF champion, you wonder how long he's going to wait. Now, if Kell Brook has to fight Spence right after a Golovkin fight, regardless of that outcome, and obviously if Brook pulls off the big upset, you don't know if he's even going to go back to welterweight. A bunch of things going on there, but interesting. I mean, can you have two tougher assignments in a row than Triple G and Spence if Brook does actually have to do that? Should be interesting, but there's a lot of things to talk about there, obviously, and there's a lot of buzz on social media with Spence and just about everybody who's talented from 140, like a Terrence Crawford, to 154. A lot of great fights and fighters in between, but Spence wants his title shot. He wants that IBF belt, and we'll see if he gets it. Another guy who's hungry for championship caliber fights is coming up next, Thomas Cornflake LaMagna, who has a tough assignment with Dusty Harrison coming up on the horizon. And the winner of that fight will definitely step up and create a lot more buzz. And we'll be back with Mr. Cornflake right after this. Alrighty, welcome back to Ring News 24 Boxing Radio, the boxing show where we bring you a sweet science straight up with no twists. And our first guest is no stranger to the show. I've been interviewing this guy for many years now. He's stepping up the ladder. He's turned pro in 2011. Has a fight coming up on September 15th. He holds a professional record of 21-1 with 9 KOs. Has a big fight on the horizon with an undefeated fighter, Dusty Hernandez Harrison, which will take place in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania at the 2300 Arena. I'm talking about none other than Thomas Cornflake LaMagna. Welcome back to the show, Thomas. It's been a while. How are you?
Yeah, it's been a long time. I'm good. How are you? How are you doing?
I'm doing excellent, and you have this big fight coming up, and the first thing I want to discuss about it is it's a fight that has been rescheduled, change of scenery, pushed back a little bit. Originally, it was supposed to take place a little earlier at the Taj Mahal. That fell through. There was worry. I don't want to say worry, but there was concern about when it would be scheduled and where. That got done pretty quickly. Take us through that process first. What goes through your mind as a fighter? Who, you know, you have a fight, you're ready to go, it's in jeopardy. What happens next?
Yeah, man. I mean, it was crazy because, we had everything set for Taj Mahal, and then, you know, like everybody knows, it's actually closing down like a week and a half prior to the date we had it. And, you know, it was a bummer because, like, you didn't know what was going to happen. You know, you didn't know if anybody was going to step up to the plate and, you know, take this fight over and, you know, want to do it. And thankfully they did. You know, Final Form Promotions, GH3, and Pelts Boxing, you know, Russell Pelts, you know, they put it together, did a live. And look, it's a day earlier, and it's in Philadelphia. It's in a neutral ground. You know, I don't have to go to D.C., and Dusty don't got to come to Atlantic City. You know, so, but it was definitely, you know, I was worried that it wasn't going to happen because, you know, like, as soon as me and Dusty, like, really announced that and we put it out, you know, the buzz was pretty big, you know. So, I'm just glad it's happening. You know, September 15th can't come any sooner for me.
Yeah, it's a big fight. It's a fight that J. Russell Peltz is talking about, and is excited about, and we'll definitely look forward to it. And I hear some static there. I don't know if that's your phone or mine. But anyway, Thomas, you know, going back a little bit, last time I spoke to you, I think is when you were getting ready for the Antoine Douglas fight. That fight was your first professional defeat. And I think I lost Thomas. He's not even on the phone. So that obviously those technical difficulties were on his end because his call dropped. So let's see if we can get him back on. Always excitement when you're dealing with block talk radio. As you hear that. All right, so I don't know what's going on there. Let's take a break and see if we can get Thomas on.
No, Cam, tell us at what point the fight is ended. But anyway, it is another knockout for Marvin Hagler. He's scored 36 knockouts now in 47 fights. He's won 44, lost 2, with 1 draw. And it is... Here's the announcement.
Unable to continue, the winner by a knockout in the 7th round, Marvin Hagler!
Marvin Hagler, and they have decided...
All right, we're back live. I do have Thomas back on the line, and it seems to be okay now. So let's get to it, Thomas, before something else happens. And I don't know if you heard me, but I said I think the last time I had spoken with you was right before your Antoine Douglas fight. And in that fight, it didn't go your way. You were thumping the 6th round. You had a nice little winning streak since then. Take us back to that fight, the frustrations that you had. You certainly wanted that fight to continue. You were upset when it was stopped. Talk about going through that fight, the loss, what you learned from it, and how you become a better fighter as a result.
Yeah, what I learned everything from that fight. You know, I think I learned more out of that one loss than any 21 of my wins. You know, I make a joke, but I tell everybody, you know, I had the worst of all worlds. I had the best of all worlds. in a bad way in one fight. You know, I got dropped, stopped, and I lost. You know, all in one fight. So I got the best of all the worlds in one. So honestly, now going forward, I know what that feels like. You know, very disappointing. Took a major setback in my, you know, personal life. You know, depressed that I just lost. You know what I mean? Like, I was on a good streak, 16 wins, and then I suffered that defeat. So, you know, a very good, talented fighter, you know, went on to do some good things. You know, unfortunately, he took a loss, but, you know, he'll bounce back. He showed tremendous heart. You know, but, you know, that fight taught me a lot, man. You know, it taught me a lot about my character, how I can bounce back, you know, five straight, drop down in weight. I feel great at the lower weight. You know what I mean? I've been fighting anywhere between 48 and, like, 52. You know what I mean? Stuff like that. So, I mean,
And once again, Thomas's call has dropped. So this is getting lovely. So let's see if we can get him right back on. Thank you, Blog Talk Radio, for another stellar night of wonderful customer service.
Hello.
Yeah, it happened again, Thomas. Right now we're exactly live. So we were in the middle.
I don't know what it is. Yeah, I mean, I'm in a great spot. You know, look, you know, in a short story nutshell, you know, I learned everything in that fight about myself, about where I was at.
And Thomas got dropped again, so I'm not sure the deal is, but we'll try again. We have a few more minutes before we have to move on, so let's see. I think it's clearly from his end because of all the stats. But we'll see.
Hello.
Yeah, if you don't succeed first, Thomas, we try again, so I don't know. But no, we're not getting him at all. All right, so this is wonderful. So Thomas Cornflake-Lamont is trying to tell his story, and we're trying to get this interview going, but his call keeps dropping. Wonderful. All righty, so let's see what we could do. So I will flesh out the rest of what's going on with Thomas and his big fight coming up, and if he does try and call back, we'll try and get it done, but it's obviously something that keeps occurring. So Thomas was talking about the drop in weight since the Douglas fight, and he was a little over 157 when he fought Antoine Douglas back in March of 2015. And since then, with the exception of one fight, his first fight back against Joshua Robinson, where he tipped the scale at 158, he's been hovering between 148 and 155. Now, a fight with Harrison is scheduled for the vacant USBA welterweight title, which is 147 pound limit, against Dusty Hernandez. Harrison. So that's one of the end. One of the things I wanted to get to with Thomas is if he's going 150, 147, or where he wants to come in at with weight. But obviously, we have a fiasco on our hands with the calls. Let's try one more time, see if we can get that information from him.
Hello.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yeah, Anthony. I'm not going to lie, my man. It has to be you. I'm in a perfect spot. I got all my bars, and I've been in the same spot the whole time.
Yeah, no, because I'm on the radio here, so on the internet. So I don't know if it is from me. There's nothing I can do. I can change the location. But let's try and get in a couple more questions before we move on. You were talking about how you got dropped lower, and you've been going around anywhere from 148 to 155. This fight with Harrison is scheduled for the USBA welterweight title, and with that, what do you anticipate coming into that fight? No, we're not getting him. All right, this is just a total bust. I should have stood in my bed today. But we'll take a quick break. Let's see if we have Ivan Robinson on, because he is our next scheduled guest. I just don't believe this. There's nothing I can do about it, but what can you do? Live. I'm not sure what's going on. I'm going to try and resolve these technical issues. So what I'm going to do now is going to try and get Ivan Robinson on. Maybe we'll get Thomas on a little bit later if the issue is indeed solved. I think I might have solved it. No help to the miserable service of Blog Talk Radio, but what can you do? So I will try and get this show back in full swing by getting Ivan Robinson on the line. And if not, I'll come back and end it. But bear with us if you want to hear Ivan Robinson and possibly Thomas Cornflake Lamont here on Ring News 24 Boxing Radio. Just stand by. Hopefully this will be the last break I have to take for a while. Let's see. Alrighty, welcome back to Ring News 24 Boxing Radio, the boxing show where we bring you sweet science and medical and many technical difficulties straight up with no twists. But without further ado, we do have Ivan Robinson on the line. We'll try and get back to Mr. LaMagna a little bit later, and we'll see. But Ivan Robinson is here, obviously had a long professional career, fought many great fighters. Obviously, his two fights with Arturo Gatti are stuff of legend, but he's been in there with many, many top-notch guys, many great fights to discuss. And he's been back a little bit, as we had John Responte on last week. He told us about Mr. Robinson, wrote a wonderful article about Ivan on MaxBoxing.com, and he's been nice enough to come on and share some of his time on us here on Ring News 24. Welcome to the show, Ivan.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it.
Oh, thank you. Pleasure is all ours. Now, obviously, Ivan, your name is forever baked in the cake with the fight you had with Arturo Gatti the first time around. In 1998, you scored the upset of the year. It was also the fight of the year. It's a fight where you were knocked down and came back and won. And then you beat Gatti again in a tough rematch where that fight was a unanimous decision, where the first time around it was a split decision. I'm sure you've been asked about these two fights millions of times, but here it is, a million and one. Take us back to those two fights, the first fight, the second fight, and what I want to know, obviously, what went on during those fights, the competition, all of that, how it brought you to eyeballs and people that might not have known you before that, what it did for your career. But also, if any kind of relationship did you build with Arturo after those fights? Obviously, he has passed and sadly gone. But take us through all of that, and whatever you want to share with us would be appreciated.
First of all, I'd like to thank you guys for having me on the show tonight. It's an honor. You know, I mean, of course, I fought two great fights with Arturo, 20 rounds. It may seem like it's being talked a lot, which apparently it is. I don't get too many sports writers or TV analysts or sports reporters to call me and talk about the fight. I had a couple people call me about it. But, you know, first of all, you know, rest in peace, Arturo Gatti. He became a real big fan even before we fought each other. It was just, you know, you have to really know the business of boxing and how the promoters do things and how they go about it. I mean, at that time when me and Arturo was set to fight, I was still early. Well, not that early, but I was getting pretty late in my career. I was 26, I believe, years old when we fought. And I pretty much had won the USBA title, lost the IBF title fight to Philip Holliday, which that was a magnificent fight. My first time on HBO, we both threw over something like 1,500 punches in the whole fight. That was magnificent. You know, it's just great to be named with a lot of great fighters in my time and some in the past. Like I was saying about Arturo, it was just funny because Arturo was signed with Main Events. Pernell Whitaker was signed with Main Events. Meldrick Taylor, a friend of mine, was signed with Main Events. Mark Breeley and Evander Holyfield. All I had at the time, my manager, Eddie Woods, all we had at the time was a handshake with Dino Duva, Lou Duva. Cassie wasn't really in as much as she is in now. She was known, but she's not the big wheel. She wasn't the big wheel then as she is now. And it was just ironic that every time Pernell went to go to camp, they would call Arturo and they would call me. And it was just amazing how each time we in camp, I mean, me and Arturo, we always ran with Pernell. We ate with Pernell. We went shopping with Pernell. We did a whole lot of things with Pernell. But it was just ironic that we would never box each other. And I mean, we would put in 20, 30 rounds of camp with Pernell Whitaker, me and Arturo, but they would never let us box each other. I don't know if Main Events was looking at me fighting Arturo, because at the time, Arturo was a junior lightweight champion, beating a lot of people, knocking a lot of people out, as a lot of people called him the human cannon, the Rocky of boxing, all those type things. And I mean, he sucked that up. I mean, he deserved that. I mean, Gaddy was a warrior, even in training. I mean, what he gave in his fight is what he gave in training. I mean, he never backed down. He worked hard. I mean, this guy worked so hard. It was crazy. And we grew a real great friendship with me and him. It was just, we were just like brothers. But like I said, we never boxed each other. Actually, the month before me and Arturo actually fought each other, I had fought two months before that. I had fought in Philadelphia, and I won an eight-round unanimous decision, but I got cut. And Shane Mosley was coming in town to fight, and he was fighting somebody, or he was looking for an opponent for him to fight. So what I did, I called the newscast. I called Shane Mosley room and said to him that it was very disrespectful for him to come in the city of Philadelphia and try to bring somebody outside of Philly to fight, then besides the fight, the guy in the hometown, which was me. So, you know, they made the fight, you know. But the prior before that fight, when Shane Mosley guy had fought, I had got cut. But when we signed for that fight, you know, my team was very ecstatic. The city of Philadelphia was going crazy. They wanted to see that fight. I wanted that fight. I got right in good shape. I left my fight that I was in. After I won that, I went straight to camp to get ready for Shane Mosley. But what happened? I suffered a cut in the fight that I had before that. And for some reason, they bought some type of special headgear in for me to have in training. But what happened, the headgear rubbed on top of the cut and reopened the cut. And we was out of the Shane Mosley fight. So at the time, my manager, Eddie Woods, was trying to find us a fight. Nobody will fight us, even though we had just lost to Phillip Holliday, I think, like a year or so ago. We were still hot. You know, we were still pretty much good. We wanted to fight Oscar. He turned us down. He had just knocked out Jesse James Leha, which he was supposed to fight me, but he didn't want to give me the money. He gave it to Jesse James Leha, and they fought. So I never forget, I'm in the gym training, didn't know what I was going to do. My manager going crazy. He don't know who he can get us to fight. Main Events was my promoters, but they didn't have me under contract. So really, they didn't really have to find me a fight. It was just like, well, if we get you a fight, we don't get you a fight. So apparently, my manager, Eddie Woods, and Dino Duva, Carl Moretti, and the Main Events team talked about a fight with me and Gaddy. I never forget it. I was in the gym training, and my manager grabbed me, my dad. No, it was me, my trainer, Odell Cafe, and Bowie Fisher, and took us in the dressing room and said that he had a fight for us. And we asked him when. And he told us, and he said, you would never expect who they want you to fight. So, you know, I'm watching a lot of Arturo guys fight, not knowing that I'm fighting, but that was what happened. He said to me, he said, they want you to fight Arturo Gatti. I said, Arturo Gatti? You mean Thunder? He was like, yeah. I was like, nah, you got to be kidding me. He's like, yeah, we want you to fight him. And, you know, me, a hometown boy, Philadelphia, we don't care who we fight. We'll fight a dude in his backyard, in his mama kitchen. So I said, yeah, I'll fight him. And you know, everything from there was just A-OK. We signed the contract. We made the fight. Of course, I got a bunch of, I don't want to say death threats, but that's pretty much what it was. You ain't going to beat Gaddy. Gaddy going to put you in a hospital. He punched too hard. He going to knock you out. You can't take no body shots. Yeah, I mean, we went through it the whole time. But, you know, my team prepared me very well. Bowie Fisher, Odell Cafe, took me in the gym, trained me in the gym. They moved me to, I was living in Jersey at the time. They moved me back to Philly in the Northeast Philadelphia, put me in an apartment for about 8 weeks. My manager came, picked me up every morning, took me running. 5 o'clock in the morning, brought me back, made me go to the spa workout, took me to eat lunch, dinner, took me to the gym. After he took me to the gym, he dropped me off home. He took my keys from me. They took my car keys from me. All I had was a TV, and I think back at that time it was like Xbox or something. That's all I could play. I couldn't do nothing. Wash clothes. I was just basically, you know, isolated to just thinking about nobody but Gaddy. We trained hard for 8 weeks for Gaddy. We had a game plan for Gaddy. The press conference, Gaddy talked about so much about how I couldn't bring knives to a gunfight. He was going to knock me out. You know, and I understand that when two fighters get together, a lot of times you try to promote the fight to make it better where you can get more fans to come to the fight to see it. But to me, it was just a whole disrespectful situation. I just looked at that Gaddy just disrespect me from me being a fighter. You know, he could just walk through me, this, that, and other. And I just trained hard. But I never forget the day of the fight. I was really nervous because I think the night before I watched the Gaddy Rafael Ruelas fight, and I'll never forget Larry Merchant saying that Rafael Ruelas said that Arturo Gaddy broke his ribs. And I'm saying to myself, you know, I know guys can punch, but I don't know nobody who can punch that hard. And the only person I ever knew could punch like that was George Foreman. But George Foreman is a big man. Arturo Gaddy is a small guy, you know. And it really did scare me, you know. It scared me. But, like I said, I was determined to win, and I was going to do whatever I had to do to win. Now, the whole time in the camp, we was just practicing and working on nothing but boxing, giving Gaddy angles. We knew he could punch, but I knew that Gaddy was a lot slower. He started late, so I looked at it as an advantage to me because I had great boxing skills. I had pretty well good defense. I knew how to get out the way of punches. And plus, I knew I was quick on my feet. I could give him angles. But I don't know what it was. I had nothing to drink. I had nothing but water. I warmed up good in my dressing room. But 30 seconds right before we went out to the ring, I had told my manager, Eddie Woods, I told both of my trainers, Bowie Fisher and Odell Cafe, and my cut man, Leon Tabs, and I told my best friend, Rennie, who was my partner, and he was in the corner with us. I told them, I said, you know what? I said, we're not boxing Gaddy. I said, Gaddy disrespect me too much in camp. The reporters talk too much about me. I said, I'm going out and make this a fight. And the first thing they said is, please, Ivan, don't do that. Please, Ivan, don't do that. All I can remember is that first round, I think that probably was the best round of my whole career. You know, and it showed because I was really excited. The drilling in my bones and going through my blood, it was just crazy, you know. And we went out there, and I think I did everything that I was supposed to about 10 seconds in that 10th round, when I got hit with that left hook, and it put me on a boardwalk in Atlantic City. That was crazy. I think my life was – I thought I was gone, but I was in such good condition. My conditioning coach, Bill, he worked with me so good. He came up with a technique about working with me with body shots. It worked. And, you know, I just went in there. I absorbed everything with the Gaddy fight. Like I said, Gaddy could punch. He was a good warrior, a great warrior, great champion. But I knew at the time that I was the quicker guy. I had the quicker hands. Plus, I had the better movement. I had the better style. And nowadays, back in the day, back in the 30s, back in the 40s, 50s up to 2016, which soon be 2017, style make fights. And my style was the exact style for the Gaddy fight. I didn't think about it until after we won the fight, but I was still wondering and saying to myself, why would they put a boxer in there with me? I mean, put a boxer as myself in there with a guy like Gaddy, who's a puncher. I'm a boxer. There's no way that Gaddy's going to beat me unless he get me in quicksand and he able to hit me and knock. I already knew that I had a good chin. I already knew I had great defense. And that's basically, that's what reborn Ivan Robinson. That's what got me to the pinnacle of making the money that I should have made when I came out of the Olympics. Well, before I went to the Olympics and Oscar De La Hoya went and I didn't go. I should have been making that money from the beginning. But, you know, that's what happened. Sometimes things happen for a reason. And to this day, I still thank Main Events. I still thank Arturo Gaddy because if it wasn't guys like Arturo Gaddy to give Ivan Robinson the opportunity – to actually, again, go on HBO to show his talent and really show what he can do, you know, you guys wouldn't be sitting here talking to me today. You know, I'd probably be in a garbage bag somewhere. Y'all guys be trying to pull my name out of bag, or I'd be a lost fighter, forgotten about, whatever. But, you know, that led to the second Gaethje fight. And the second Gaethje fight was just, it was a win situation, but it was more of a coming out party, because I already knew Gaethje couldn't beat me. I knew I was the better boxer. I had the quicker hands. The things I should have did in the first fight that I didn't do, I just did in the second fight. And it just capitalized on it, you know. So that turned out to be a great fight again. I think that third round became the fight of the year. It was just magnificent, you know. It brought out a lot of celebrities. I got to meet a lot of people. I got to connect with a lot of people. And I got to do a lot of great things that I'm doing today. And I still, to this day, I still applaud Arturo Gatti for giving me the opportunity to fight him. You know, I mean, he was a deadly guy. He could knock out with either hand. And a lot of people didn't want to fight him, but, you know, I stepped up to the challenge, and I did what I was supposed to do. And it got me both wins. And like I said, it got me to where I'm at today, talking to you guys on, you know, live radio.
Yeah, definitely. Great stuff there. Thank you for sharing that. I want to go back in time a little bit, though, Ivan. The other great thing about your career and what I want to talk to you about a little bit is the fights that you had at the famed Blue Horizon in Philadelphia. I mean, I remember watching fights on the USA Network in particular. So many great fights, always a great happening. I talked with Mr. Peltz about it. Jack Familio comes on here a lot, also very close to the Blue Horizon. Talk about, I mean, you've had several fights there. Talk about the atmosphere and what it was like fighting at the Blue Horizon.
You kind of broke up. Which fight you want me to talk about?
The fight you had at the Blue Horizon?
You know, it's kind of crazy. My memory is not going. I'm not beat up or nothing like that. But, I mean, there were just so many great fights at the Blue Horizon. I mean, coming up as a kid, you know, and at the time back then, Sean O'Grady and Al Albert, they were the commentators.
Right.
I still talk to Sean O'Grady every now and then through Facebook. You know, back then, USA was what it was. It was the fights that, you know, catapulted a lot of fighters as myself. And then on top of that, it was at the Blue Horizon. And the Blue Horizon was a landmark for a lot of Philly fighters. And not just Philly fighters, people all across the world. You know, Ohio, Columbus, Atlanta, New York. You know, fighters came from all over to fight at the Blue Horizon. And you had to be special to get on a Russell Peltz card, because Russell Peltz was the man, and he's still the man in Philadelphia doing great things now. And Philadelphia had a new venue called the Alhambra down at 2300 Arena down South Philly. But I had some great fights. I think my first great fight at the Blue Horizon was Demetrius Sabalas. You know, Demetrius Sabalas was from South Africa. He was a kid that kept coming straight ahead. You know, people didn't give me an opportunity or a chance to win. But one thing for sure, two things for certain, I guess I was a different breed. You know, I came off that breed from the Ray Leonards, the Marvin Hagler, the Tommy Hearns. You know, I wasn't a guy with great punching power. I mean, God forbid, I still say if I had half a Charles Broad knockout power, if I had half of the things that Ray Leonard could do, if I had half of the things that Marvin Hagler could do, I mean, I'd probably still be undefeated fighting now. But that was great fights. I had a fight with Demetrius Sabalas. I had a fight with a kid named Alexander Lassen, which that fight was real special because even though it was, I think it might have been early in my career, this was the first time that I had problems with my hands. And I had a bad right hand. I couldn't throw my right hand, you know. And I've always worked in the gym with my left hand, always working off the jab, the hook, the uppercut, the body shot, the step around. And finally, in a fight, I had to go to something that I knew that was going to be a weapon, and it was my left hand. And, I mean, I beat this kid, Alexander Lassen, from the second round to the fifth round. I mean, I pulverized him with just the left hand. I mean, I couldn't throw the right hand. I mean, I threw it, but it was so sore that when I hit on the knuckle with it, it felt like I broke it. So I couldn't throw it. And I, at the time, my dad was with me. I told my dad that I couldn't throw it. And he was like, look, you've been in the gym all this time training and working with this left hand. You didn't really have to, but you did. So now you have to go out here and use what we taught you while you was in the gym. And, man, it worked for me. I mean, I hit this kid with jabs, uppercuts, left hook. And in the fifth round, I stopped him with a left hook to the top of the head that opened up a cut. Then I had another fight with a local a rival from across town in Phoenixville named Jimmy DeAurelio. We never fought as amateurs, but somewhere along the line, I knew we were going to fight. I didn't know it in the amateurs, but he was always heavier than me. But somewhere down the line, I figured we would fight as pros, but I was on such a mission at the time, I didn't even think about fighting him. But, of course, you know, Russell Peltz, trying to make a great fight at the Blue Horizon for the city of Philadelphia, he made me and Jimmy DeAurelio. And, of course, Jimmy DeAurelio, he was, I think he was like 20-4 at the time. He was still a nice little hot prospect from Philly, and I was a rising hot prospect from Philly. So why not us two fight? And it was a great fight. I think Jimmy DeAurelio thought the fact that with me having quick hand speed and boxing pretty well, he figured he would get me into a slug match and he would prevail. But that was wrong again. I hit him with a left hook and split him open and stopped him. So, you know, I had a lot of great fights. Then I had a great fight later in my career with a kid named Louis Santiago from Puerto Rico, but he was training in Philadelphia. I mean, he was knocking everybody out. He was a young guy. I was pretty old, but he was a young guy. He was knocking out everything. I fought to a draw with him, but I thought he won. But he hit me with a right hand that I thought that was a right hand that Tommy Hearns would hit anybody with and knock him dead. But he hit me. He caught me with it. He put me on Quarry Street. But I retaliated and came back. But then a couple months later, I fight a kid from the Virgin Islands, and it's just crazy. Me and this kid are the best of friends. I'm talking about Vivian Harris. And this guy, I mean, he could punch. Vivian Harris hit me with a right hand. I think he knocked me into like 6 days. It was just crazy. And then he the only guy that messed up my eye to the point where it swelled up real bad. And I couldn't see out of it, but I fought him to a draw too. And for some reason, honestly, I never said this because nobody asked me, but you guys asked me about it, and it's part of, you know, my resume, and it's part of this story. I fought to a draw with him. Honestly, I think out of all the fights that I had, and I had 45 fights, I think out of all the fights, and I got 12 losses. Out of all my fights, I think I have 4 losses that I can really think of. And one of my losses really came from Vivian Harris. I think Vivian Harris beat me that night. But, you know, everybody say it was a gift. Man, look, it was a gift. It was a gift. I walked out with a draw, but that's a fight that I'll never forget. I think Vivian Harris beat me. I told Vivian that like 3 years ago when we first became friends on Facebook, and he was shocked. He was like, nobody ever told me that I beat him when I actually lost. I said, well, you know, I'm a man of my word. I know what happens in a fight. You being a fighter, you know how you feel in fights. You know what you could have done. You know what you couldn't have done. You know what you should have done. And just sometimes it's not your night. Guys are better than you sometimes, you know. And to me, the only thing I think about with my career, I ended at 32-12 with 2 draws and 12 knockouts. Honestly, I should say I should be about 36-6. because my other six losses that I lost, I shouldn't have never lost. But, you know, at some stage and some time in your career, you just fight to be fighting because you had a love of fighting. It doesn't mean that you don't want to. You just feel as though it's something that you have to. And sometimes we guys as fighters, we fight past our prime. I mean, no one can tell us when to put the gloves down. No one can really tell us when to hang them up. No one, just like no one can tell us when not to go to the gym. You know, like right now, nobody can tell me I don't go sit in the gym and don't train this kid or don't give this kid advice. It's not good. You just can't tell a guy that. That's like me telling LeBron James he needs to hang it up now. He got a championship. No, LeBron can still play, and he's still able to do the things he can do. So if he can do it, why not do it? And that's just how I felt. I felt so, you know, I was still able to do the things that I do. I should have stopped in 05 after the last fight was Julio Cesar Chavez. I should have quit. But, you know, my heart is bigger sometimes than my eyes and bigger than my chest. And, you know, I just intend to do things that, you know, I shouldn't do. But with the grace of God, I'm still able to function. I can go to gym every day, train my fighters. I can still count money. I can talk to you guys. You know, I can watch and count, read, write. So, you know, God has, you know, been good to me, and I want to thank him for helping me get to where I needed to be in life, and I want to thank you guys for taking the time out to talk to me.
All right. Thank you for all that. Good stuff there. A lot of great memories, great fights that you've discussed. Talk a little bit about what you're doing now. You're giving back a little bit. You're working with fighters. Give us a little bit more detail of that side of Ivan Robinson.
Well, now the side of Ivan Robinson is probably something that all fighters, you know, intend to do or want to do, have done, or trying to do. One is that, of course, you know, I retired in 08. I was in Jersey, lived in Jersey from 96 to 09. But in 07, 08, I opened up a gym in Jersey for a while, stayed there. Rosa DeZio, my man Troy Browning, and I opened up a gym out there, and Rosa named it R&B Fitness Gym, and a lot of people in the city know about it. It was a great gym. A lot of great Jersey fighters came through, you know, or worked with fighters, but then 09, I left and came back to Philly. So, you know, I've been wanting to get into the business of boxing, open up my own gym. I came up with my own company, which is it's a mighty thing. I'm getting that off the ground right now. I have a couple kids that I train right now. Actually, right now I didn't really sign him. I didn't sign him. I'm training him. Terrence Carson, who's the 96 bronze medalist, he's one of my fighters that I'm training right now. That is getting ready to, as you can say, make a comeback. My brother Kareem Robinson, he's up under my promotion, which is a mighty thing. I have a young lady by the name of Camille James. She's, I think, 95 pounds. Yeah, 95 pounds. She's the Atlanta national champion. I have Benji Perez, who's another fighter of mine. He's 152-pounder. And now I'm working with a kid by the name of Verdell Rivera, who's 4-0 with 4 knockouts. He's from Camden. And each and every year in Philadelphia, my old stomping ground, me and Mel Trichella, nice town neighborhood, I do a give back every year, every summer, the second week of August. With the nice town CDC where I grew up at, they do a give back festival. It's called the Nice Town Give Back Festival. They do it for 2 days. And on the Friday, on the Saturday of every second August of the year, I put a boxing event on. And the last 4 years, I've been doing Philly, Lancaster, and this year I did Jersey. Next year, I'm going to do a two-day it's a item, it's a mighty thing boxing event tournament where I'm gonna bring in Atlanta, I'm gonna bring in DC, Atlantic City, and I think I'm gonna do Virginia, which is a 2-day tournament. I give back to the city. I mean, I give back to the neighborhood where I was raised and born and taught how to box at. I get sponsors to help me. They donate money to help me put the event on, which is the amateur boxing event, which is 15 fighters or 15 fights, which is like 30 fighters. And each fight, after each fight, you know, we announce the winner and we give championship belts. And each year I bring different type of boxers to the event. This year, kind of a little lax. We were supposed to have Riddick Bowe come through and all that, but they didn't come. But next year, we're going to do a big, big amateur boxing event. It's going to be broadcast all over the internet, Facebook, Instagram. You know, I'm just trying to give back to the city of Philadelphia, to my neighborhood. I try to help the kids as much as possible. You know, get them off the street. We have so much killing throughout the world, not just in Philadelphia, which I think Philly is the number one murder rate in the whole United States, but not just Philadelphia. We have it all over the world. And we're trying to get these young kids off the street into the boxing gym. You know, put the guns down, pick up the gloves. But it, to me, it's not just about boxing. It's about education, because if our kids can't go to school and learn how to read and write, you know, as my dad used to say, do arithmetic, you know what I'm saying, subtract, add, divide, multiply, mm-hmm. how they going to make millions of dollars? How they going to be the Floyd Mayweathers of the upcoming millennium? How they going to be the Dante Wilders, you know, the Terrence Crawfords? So I would try to reach out to more boxers next year to see if I can get them to help me, you know, sponsor what it is I need, you know, more trophies, well, belts, you know, more boxing uniforms, help these guys donate them to fly them out here, get them in hotel rooms, feed them, you know, whatever I can do to help the kids, that's my main goal. I've always been an advocate of helping the kids since I was like 18. I've always worked with kids, even before I really got into boxing heavy like that, making money. I was always into giving back and helping the kids because I was a kid too. And my mom and dad didn't always have it great. They didn't always have it good. My dad, it was times my dad couldn't always get me boxing shoes or more hand wraps or new headgear or cup or gloves, you know. So I had people, you know, donate these things. So I want to do the same thing that was done for me, for these youngsters coming up. And like I said, it's not just about boxing. You know, we have basketball players, we have football players, we have doctors, we have cops. You know, we have a whole bunch of kids, you know, young ladies, young men out here in the world that want to do things besides box. You know, look up Miss Shields. She's a 2-time Olympic gold medalist, you know. So it's not like dreams can't come true. Dreams can come true. And there's nothing wrong with dreaming. I tell guys that every day. Oh, man, my dreams ain't going to come true. That don't mean you stop dreaming. I still dream, and I'm 45 years old.
Good stuff there. yeah, I mean, it's really wonderful what you're doing. And, yeah, it's all about giving back and helping the kids when you can. And, obviously, boxing is a great way, like you said, to get off of the streets and use that aggression that you might have in a more productive way.
Right.
So good stuff there. Before we let you go, though, Ivis, I want to get pick your brain a little bit. You talked about what
sure.
you've done in the ring, what you're doing now. But as a box, I want to get your pulse as a boxing fan. Some of the guys, boxers, or fights that you've seen and admired over the years. Who are some of your favorites?
Well, what you want me to start from? Like, I can't go back too far. I can't go back far. But I'm gonna just
go back
as far
as
I can. All right. Well, I mean, honestly, I mean, you know, I can't go back to the 60s, the 50s, and the 40s. But I'm, you know, start at the 80s with the Ray Leonard's and those guys. I mean, I don't think that we are never, ever, ever again get any generation like them 80s, you know. I mean, those guys were phenomenal. He's talking about you had a bunch of guys in different weight classes that you can you just name off the top of your head. Sugar Ray Leonard, Marvin Hagler, Boom Boom Mancini, Greg Hogan, Donald Curry, Tommy Hearns, George Foreman, Larry Holmes, Mike Tyson. Then you got the guys like Dante Wilder, Anthony Joshua. You got Terrence Crawford. You got Danny Garcia. You got you had my man Mark Too Sharp Johnson. You had Daryl Coley. You got Chop Chop Coley, who's still fighting. You have one of the all-time greats, Carlos Monzon. Also, you got to put Bernard Hopkins in that category too. Even though I think he tarnished his he's tarnishing his career right now. But you got to put Roy Jones in that category too. Definitely. I mean, I love him, but it's just certain things that I can't get around with him. I don't know what it is. Maybe it's just his arrogance, maybe the way he is, but shoot, you got to put Floyd Mayweather, you know, at the top of this millennium. I mean, when you talk about all-time great, you mean my one-time all-time great of all is Sugar Ray Robinson. I mean, nobody can argue with me about it. Sugar Ray Robinson is just the best that ever did it. I mean, Floyd said he's the best. You know, Ali said he was the best. You know, rest in peace, Muhammad Ali. He said he was the best, but nah. Sugar Ray Robinson. Nowadays, to this day right now, I got to stick with hometown favorite Danny Garcia. But I love Danny, but I'm going to give a slight edge to Terrence Crawford. I like Terrence Crawford. You know, you have Andres out there. You have Daniel Jacobs. It's just so many, you know, young men out here nowadays that you can actually put in different categories out here. You're talking about also, I can't forget about my man Tyrone Everett, who's the best lightweight Philadelphia fighter in the world, which I figure I'm on top of Tyrone Everett. But Tyrone Everett, then you got my cousin Joe and Jeff Chandler. I could mention Charles Brewer. There's just so many fighters nowadays that I can mention. I don't think you guys or nobody else would say is a bad choice. The only thing is right now that I would like to see, promoters work with promoters nowadays. I wouldn't like to see one promoter in California don't work with a Philly promoter because of whatever reason. Maybe the California promoter has a better California fighter. So what? Let him fight the Philadelphia good fighter. Let him fight. Let him, you know, do the things that they need to do. Let all these guys fight real fighters, and let's get a body that's one body that is really a body. Like, there was the IBF. There was the WBC, the WBA, IBF, WBC, WBA, and I think the WBO. Those are the four main titles out there. Now you got this
right.
IBO, WBO. Those titles, I mean, come on now. I mean, those titles are just titles to hold. I mean, the real recognized titles are the IBF, WBA, WBO, and the WBC. Those are the ones that I grew up on. Those are the ones I know. All these other titles, I don't know. I guess it's just out for everybody to make money. And let the champions fight the champions. I mean, there's enough guys out here in the world to all be champions. Everybody has one goal. Everybody wants to be champion and make money. That's all we want to do is make money and be champion. See, it's different when I came up. When I was coming up, it was about belts. But honestly, it wasn't about that. To me, it was just about guys like yourselves, the sports writers knowing who I am and wanting to see me in great fights. Not until after the Arturo Gatti's fighting them and fighting the Manfredis and fighting the Jesse James Lehigh and fighting Julio Cesar Chavez, I start looking at it as a money situation because, you know, it was something that could help me take care of my family and help take care of me down the line. It's about boxing. It's a sport, yes, but it's also a living. And that's how I think everybody should take it.
All righty. Thank you, Ivan Robinson. Good stuff there. Definitely looking out for the box out there, and we'll definitely keep in touch, and we love what you're doing. Now, I'm just in closing out, I wanted to give you a chance to give out any social media or any other promotions that you might want to tell us about before we let you go. Thank you for your time. We'd love to have you on again.
I would love to come back on again. Anytime you're willing to want to talk to me, you have my number. You can call me. I just want to give a shout-out to all the fighters across the world. You know what I'm saying? You know, keep working hard, dedication, hard work. To all the managers and the promoters in the world, you know, let's just make good fights that all the fans wants to see. Let's make them happen. I wish we can just throw this catch weight out and let all the true champions fight the true champions at the exact weight. The only ones that has done it in the past two decades has been Bernard Hopkins and Triple G. They're the only two guys that stay in their weight classes and fought and defended their titles the way that they're supposed to. If they moved up, they moved up to the next weight class and fought the fights that they were supposed to have. All these catchweight fights, I mean, maybe it's just me, but it's becoming a headache. It's starting to become a headache where I can't keep up with everybody. I need to keep up with everybody because I got fighters of my own. But all these catch weights, it's crazy. I just want to give a shout out to everybody that's listening. Give a shout out to my man John from Florida. I can't think of his last name. He's a good friend with y'all. Actually, he told me to call y'all tonight.
Yeah, John Responte.
I want to give a shout out to him. He's a great dude. You know, he even helped me out. He was a good sponsor this year for my It's a Mighty Thing, a boxing event that I do every year. And keep in touch with y'all guys. I'd like to give y'all a shout out and thank you for calling me and giving me time to talk to you guys on the air.
All right, thank you, and you have a good night. Ivan Robinson, good luck with everything you do.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate it.
All right, thank you. Good. Okay. And a lot of great stories there, obviously. The Gotti fights, all the guys that he's been in against. Emmanuel Augustus is another guy he waged war with. You know, he threw out a lot of good names there. And, you know, Tyrone Everett, that's a name that brought back some memories for a lot of people, I'm sure, who are listening. Everett, obviously, was a guy with great talent involved in probably one of the worst decisions ever when Alfredo Escalera got a decision over him. And Everett, unfortunately, was killed way before his time should have been, I should say. So all the good stuff there and all the talent and the passion that somebody like an Ivan Robinson brings all these years later, all the fights he's had.